Last time we got together, the talk was pleasure as an attitude. And today we're going to talk about, hear about, the art and science of happiness. So we should all be nice, pleasurable, happy people after this, after learning all this. I'm David Alkeck. I'm the president of this august body. And I'd like to welcome you. I'd like to welcome anybody who's visiting us for the first time. Any first visitors? First time? Where'd you hear from us? About us? Yeah.
Meetup.
Meetup?
Yeah.
Okay.
For bread.
Okay. Bread. All right. Brought them both? Good for you. Anybody else? Okay. Well, welcome. We have been meeting this Dallas Philosophers Forum for 40 years or so. We have an emeritus professor here of philosophy, Dr. Berman, who started, or just about started this.
Well, with other people.
Yeah. And we meet the second and fourth Tuesday of the month, except for the summer months. Philosophy is not free, so we do have our expenses. So if you'll meet our treasurer, it's $5 to come. And if you're a full-time student, it's $2, which is minimal. Don't forget to pay your bill because we don't want to be stuck with it. And take care of your server, if you don't mind. And we're going to have some questions and answers, Q&A period afterward. And please don't get up on a lectern and you know, give a long, make it a question, okay? So you'll let our speaker answer. Okay, I'm going to introduce Dr. George Kimmeldorf, who was a New Yorker, born in Brooklyn.
Brooklyn,
New York. Reared there, went to undergraduate school in the University of Rochester, another Yankee place. Graduated with his PhD from University of Michigan, and then taught numerous universities. Taught what? Math?
Math,
yes. Mathematics. His last tenure was at UTD here in Dallas. And you retired when?
I retired from teaching. UTD in 1995. A long time ago.
And since then, he's been teaching happiness. Took graduate courses or graduate... got together anyway.
Yeah, took courses. They were...
Took courses. In happiness. And has taught classes on happiness at the Dallas Community Colleges. He authored a book, From Seeker to Finder, Discovering Everyday Happiness, and promotes founded the nonprofit Human Happiness Foundation that promotes happiness. So teach us how to be happy, Dr. Kimmeldorf.
Okay, let's see if this is going to come back right again. There we go.
No? Yes, sir. It just has to think about it for a second.
Has to think about it a while. Okay, well, there it goes. Hey, imagine you just won the lottery. You just won the lottery!
Yay!
Yay! $3 million, yours, and they're going to pay the taxes on it, too. Now, imagine how happy you're going to be. You won the lottery. All these things you want to do with money, you want to take vacations. You want to give it to your kids, your grandkids, put people through college, buy a new car, vacations. Whatever you wanted to do, you can now do. Imagine how happy you'd be. Now, let's flash forward a little bit. Let's go 6 months from now. Let's go a year from now. How happy are you then? all that's interesting. Psychologists have studied that. Lottery winners are public. There's been a lot of peer-reviewed publications on how happy these people are 6 months later or 1 year later. Do you want to guess?
Not so happy.
So, I don't know what you want to conclude from that. I'll let you reach your own conclusion. Our culture teaches us how to be happy. One, financial success will make you happy. Well, now we know that's not true. At least from this research, we know it. You may not believe it yet, but you will. Acquiring goods will make you happy. The new car. Getting recognition and admiration. That'll make you happy. Power. Education. That was a math professor. Do these really make us happy? Let's look at those one at a time. Let's consider respect, fame, admiration. Let's look at successful actors, actresses, and athletes. Forgetting about the unsuccessful ones, the successful ones. Again, psychologists have studied that. Don't take my word for it. The suicide rate among those people is much higher than the general population. Interesting. Okay, what about power? Let's look at successful CEOs. They haven't been studied as much, or even, successful politicians. Do they look like very happy people? Trump is giving a speech tonight, and doesn't look like a very happy person to me. I don't know. Education. Let's look at the president of my university. Is he any happier than the person who cleans his office at night? Well, I haven't interviewed either one of them, but my guess is he's not. Now, in my own case, I started out with a new PhD, and I was assistant professor, and I was promoted to an associate professor, then got tenure and full professor, and I published whatever. And each time I got a promotion, I was happy, I was thrilled, I really looked forward to that promotion. Hey, I got tenure. No, more happy as a tenured full professor than I was as an assistant professor. That's just the facts. What about philosophers? People interested in philosophy, are they any happy or less happy than other people? Well, I tried to find the data on that. See, I really did my homework. I asked some very knowledgeable people. I asked Siri, Cortana, and Alexa. They didn't know. So bottom line, oh no. Now, some people think, I'll be happy when I find the right person to love me.
That's right.
Yes. That's right. Oh yes. Others think about how happy they're going to be if they could just get rid of this person. Let's just look out there. Let's face facts. That's the way the world works. Getting what you want will not make you happy. The new car, the new lover, the promotion. Now, that statement I made is not quite correct, because getting what you want will make you happy, but not lastingly so. It's nice to drive out with that new car, get that promotion, have a new lover. But that happiness fades away. But notice how addictive it is. And I use the word addictive, and I really mean addictive. You get a positive charge from that. What's the song? No charge from cocaine, whatever. It's like taking your cocaine away. I don't really know. I'm not a cocaine user, okay? But if you notice, you get a real positive charge, a positive jolt of happiness that vanishes. And it is truly addictive. It is truly addictive, because after that vanishes, what you now need to do is you need to find the next thing, the next promotion, the next car, the next lover, the next whatever it is. So I want to spend a fair amount of time talking about what does not make people happy. I'm going to talk about happiness, but I think it's really important to talk about that. Because unless you really see that you're just on a treadmill here, there's real no motivation for you to really look at what's really true about happiness. Although on the other hand, you people are interested in philosophy, maybe you really do have an interest in this. So, here is the good news and the bad news. Good news. You are the only source of your happiness. Bad news, you are the only source of your misery. I'm sorry, maybe I've got them reversed. Which is good, which is bad? I don't know. Who am I? How do I know? Who am I talking about happiness? Well, my major criterion for talking about happiness is that I'm a happy person. I learned how to be happy. I actually took a course. I studied one weekend a month for 5 years to learn happiness. I've taught others. I've written a book. I don't want to brag, but I'm happier than I ever thought possible. I mean, really. Okay. So, what is the secret to happiness? Okay, take out your notes and I'll get it right. The secret is, there is no secret. Learning to be happy is not mystical, mysterious, or magical. I want to say that again. Learning to be happy is not mystical, mysterious, or magical. It is something that you can learn, like learning to drive a car, learning to play a guitar, whatever. Unfortunately, they don't teach happiness in schools, but there are lots of very important life skills that they don't teach in schools. So the first step, which I've already talked about, in finding true happiness is to stop looking for it in external circumstances. And that's a hard step. I mean, it's easy to understand that, but it's really hard to do that because you're habituated to do that. And habits are hard to break, and that's just the fact of the matter. You cannot find happiness outside of yourself. So the first step is to discard our deeply ingrained, misguided beliefs that power, financial success, material goods, or the approval of others will make us happy. We want to really be approved by other people. Yeah. It's okay to want that. It's okay to want material goods. It's okay to want financial success. They're just not going to make you happy. So let me look first at the sources of unhappiness. What are the causes of unhappy emotions, such as anger, fear, depression, sorrow, rejection? What's the source of these emotions? What causes them? Well, there are unreasonable bosses, in-laws, traffic. Traffic seems to be getting worse. I've lived in Dallas a long time. It's really getting worse. War, poverty, injustice. We can try to change the outside world to make us happy, but such an attempt has two problems. Let me see if I can get my next slide up here. Okay. Oops. That doesn't seem to be working. What on earth is happening here? Okay. Okay. So let's look at the cause of unhappiness. The first thing is there's some external event out there, the boss, the traffic, whatever. But if you notice carefully, there's an emotional response to that, an unhappy response. But if you notice carefully the intermediate step, your interpretation, your story, your point of view, that is, the external event by itself does not cause the emotional response. So if you want to intervene in this process, the place to intervene is here. Why? Because changing external events is hard. It's hard to do. How do we change other people? How do we eliminate traffic jams, corrupt politicians, ISIS? Of course, after we change the outside world to get what we want, we still won't be happy. That's the other thing. When you want something, you want more. Look, all of these rich people, they're not retiring. They want more and more and more and more and more. So the path to happiness is to modify our thoughts, our expectations. Let me try that again. Modify our thoughts, our expectations, our beliefs, our interpretations, and our story. We have control over those. That is the key to happiness. So learning how to modify those, that's how one learns to be happy. Happiness is an ordinary skill that anyone can learn and master through practice, like driving a car or playing the piano. Take a 14-year-old who hasn't driven a car yet and wants to know, well, what's the secret to learning how to drive? Well, there's no secret. You gotta learn some techniques, and you gotta practice them. What's the secret to learning to play the piano? It's the same idea. You can't learn happiness from reading a book. And people will ask, in that case, why did you write one? But that's a false. And by the way, I really address that question in my book. Okay. You can't learn happiness from reading a book, just like you can't learn to drive from reading a book. Happiness is an experiential skill. People with a PhD in psychology are not happier than other people. Psychiatrists are not happier than other people. Also, it's hard to teach yourself to be happy, just like it's hard to teach yourself to drive a car or play the piano. It can be done, but in my opinion, you really need a teacher to learn the techniques. You need someone who has mastered that skill that you want to learn. Okay, let's see what we can do here now. Can you read that, or is that too small? Maybe too small. Okay, well, let me go through it anyhow. I'll go through it quickly. So I'm contrasting learning to drive a car with learning to be happy. Well, first of all, I said before, happiness is an ordinary skill. Learning to drive a car, learning to be happy, are both experiential skills. Can't get it from a book. Both of them require practice. Both of them usually require a teacher. In both cases, almost anybody can learn, but it comes easier to some people than others. Learning to drive a car, the skill is more physical than mental. It's a physical skill or whatever, while learning to be happy is more of a mental skill. And learning to drive a car, there are no habits to break unless you've already, if you're a new driver, you don't have habits to break. Learning to be happy, you've got to break a lot of mental habits. Learning to drive a car, you have to complete the course before being a competent driver. Not safe to practice on your own. But learning to be happy, you can stop at any point. Learn a little bit, practice as much as you want, quit when you want, no problem. learning to drive the car, people know that driving is a skill that must be learned. With regard to happiness, people don't know that. They think they already know how to be happy without learning it. Why on earth do you think you know how to be happy?
Because you've experienced happiness.
You've experienced happiness, that's true. But did you really find out what it is that really makes you lastingly happy? Maybe you have, maybe you haven't, I don't know. Learning to drive a car, once learned, it's easy to perform. You learn to drive a car, you know how to drive a car. The same thing is true to learning to be happy, learning happiness. Once learned, it's easy to perform, but awareness is necessary, not to revert to former ways of thinking. So I can teach you to be happy. I know how to do this. I've done it. I've taught my students how to be happy. At the end of the course, I actually do an inventory. Are you happier after taking this course? Invariably, they are. The problem is, the mistake I've made is I didn't follow up 6 months later, and I really want to do that. Seriously, I have to admit I haven't done that. So I can teach you to be happy, but I can't do it in 45 minutes to an hour. But let's get started and see how far we can go. Also, let me look at the time here. Okay, so techniques. There are 6 techniques to learn to be happy. The first one is gratitude. Now, you've all heard about gratitude. There's nothing new about it. Books have been written about it. People have preached about it. But a lot of people don't really know how to use gratitude, how to express gratitude. So if you don't mind, or actually if you do mind, let me take some time and teach you about gratitude. If we don't finish this list, that's fine. I think if you could learn gratitude this evening, that would be fine. I'll go through the rest of the list, but I really want to spend some time on this. Find something in your life for which you are truly grateful, and then feel and express that gratitude. The most important rule in putting this into practice is that the gratitude must be real and sincere. Being grateful for something because you think you should doesn't work. Your mother may have told you, be grateful that you got food on the table. Well, that's nice. It's nice to be grateful you have food on the table. But find something in your life for which you are truly grateful. By paying close attention, you can be honestly grateful for many seemingly trivial daily situations you might otherwise overlook. Driving here, there was a stop sign. I didn't really stop. I sort of rolled through the stop sign. I could be grateful there was no cop there to give me a ticket. A silly example, okay? I can be grateful that I got here on time. I'm grateful I've got an audience here. I thought maybe there'd be too few people here, or maybe there'd be too many people. If you stop and think at any moment in time, you can find something to be grateful for. Be grateful that you got to the bathroom on time. Whatever game you played, and you won the game. Be grateful that you're having fun. Practice. Practice gratitude. I don't mean to imply that I only express gratitude for mundane circumstances, but it's a good place to start. I am truly grateful that I have eyes that can see. I have ears that can hear. Legs that can walk back, I can walk. People who can't. There are so many things that you can be grateful for. So the idea is not to make a list, make an intellectual exercise out of this, but actually feel that gratitude. There are books written about gratitude that suggest you make a list and do this and do that. I'm not suggesting you do that. Do that if you want to. But just get in the habit of feeling gratitude at any particular moment. Now, what I've done is I've actually set up some triggers. when I went to my class, I drove to the airport and went to where we were doing my weekend class, and I came back, and my car was still there. That's kind of silly. But, you know, sometimes it isn't. Sometimes it was damaged, sometimes it could be a flat tire. I actually made a habit of being grateful that my car was there at the airport. And now, it's interesting, every time I come back from any trip, I've got that trigger. My car's there. I can be happy. One place I like to go to shop is Central Market in Plano. I don't know if you're familiar with it. But I decided that I was going to make the parking lot of Central Market a trigger for me. Why the parking lot of Central Market? No particular reason. So I just decided every time I go to Central Market, I go to that parking lot, I'm going to remember to feel grateful. So I say, these are just triggers. You can make it, make up your own. But feel it. Actually feel the emotion of gratitude. And what you'll notice is that you cannot be unhappy at that moment that you're feeling gratitude. At least at that moment, you can't be unhappy. Now, I am really grateful for being alive. If you read my book, you'll see I almost didn't make it. I had some serious illness. So don't make a list, but actually experience gratitude. Make it sincere. If you get nothing out of tonight other than the 2 points, or 3 points, I guess, what doesn't make you happiness, that you can learn to be happy, and that gratitude is a skill that you can learn by just practicing it. It takes nothing more than practice. I've told you now all you need to know about gratitude. But again, it's hard to break habits. It's hard to get into a new habit. So make the habit of practicing gratitude. I promise you, I'll give you double your money back. Okay? You start experiencing gratitude, you will be happier. No, I really mean that. I'm really serious. I mean, I've taught courses before, and I spend a whole week on gratitude. And I give them homework on gratitude. And the second week, we study new material. But when we study new material, I give them homework again on gratitude. And the third week, I do the same thing. New material, but I give them homework to remind them about gratitude. So that is my key. If you can remember, just to try that. Second technique, monitor your thoughts. Listen. Don't try to change them. You know, you have this voice in your head, anyone who doesn't know that? Sometimes someone will say, oh, what voice? I don't have any. We know that, we all know that we have this voice in our head. So know that that voice is not you. You know, this is a lot more difficult than practicing gratitude. That voice in your head is inaccurate. We think it's the real truth. Obviously, the real truth is coming from our head. It's inaccurate. It's incessant. It's involuntary. It's repetitive. It was influenced by childhood events. Perhaps even faulty interpretation of childhood events. Let's just take a moment of silence. Let's take 10 seconds. I want you to just listen. Okay, so there's that voice. And the skill to develop, and this ain't easy, is to not believe that voice. When I say not believe, I don't mean that voice is always false, but doubt it. You guys are interested in philosophy. You know how to doubt statements. Instead of doubting what other people say, start doubting what you say. Doubt that voice in your head. Oh, wait a second. Before I go on to that, listen especially to your inner critic. This is the voice that tells you you're not good enough. Everybody I've met, I haven't met all the 7 billion people in this world, but everybody I've met has these thoughts that you're not, that I'm not good enough. What's different is we all have different aspects of why we're not good enough. I'm not thin enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not rich enough, I'm not compassionate enough, I'm not happy enough, I don't have enough gratitude. We all have these theme and variations on I'm not good enough. And what I challenge you to do is listen to those thoughts and not believe them. Learn how, again, I think as philosophers, you probably know how to question something. You know, voice says you're not good enough for something. You're not good enough. You can say, oh, I'm not good enough. Good enough for what? You're not rich enough. Rich enough for what? How rich would I be to be rich enough? Just giving those examples. So listen to that voice. And that's hard to do. I'm not really suggesting you do that. I mean, you can try it. It took me a long, long time to do it. Let me tell you the truth. I haven't mastered that technique. I'm still going there and believing some of these voices that I hear. Okay. Next technique is meditation. A lot has been written about meditation. For a long time, it really didn't work for me. I didn't really know how to do it. But you might try that. Spend 10 minutes a day. Spend 20 minutes a day meditating. I can teach you a little bit about how to do it, but better find a book on meditation. Or if you send me some email, I'll make some recommendations to you. But it does seem to be a technique that you can use to be happier. Next, acceptance. Again, hard to do. Accept yourself and other people. Just stop rejecting reality. If you argue with reality, you are going to lose every time. You can't win against reality. So don't argue with what's so. And you can't also win any argument with the past. This shouldn't have happened. They shouldn't have done this to me. But more important, acceptance of yourself. It's so easy to look back and see things that, well, if I knew then what I know now, I wouldn't have done that. But you didn't know then what you know now. Right? You didn't. You had to go through this and learn it. Or maybe you didn't have to go through this and learn it, but you did. So again, that's another skill. Learn to accept others, and most important, learn to accept yourself. Again, a little bit hard to do. My experience is that the more successful you are with accepting yourself, the more successful you'll be with others. So the idea is to love and accept yourself exactly as you are. Exactly as you are, with all these supposed faults you have. Don't judge yourself. If you find yourself judging yourself, what do you do then?
Condemn yourself.
No, exactly. That's what you don't do. You don't condemn the judgment. Okay? The whole idea is acceptance. So, if you find yourself judging yourself, accept the fact, oh, hey, right now I'm judging myself. Oh, that's interesting. Otherwise, you can start judging that judgment, and then judging the judgment of the judgment, and you can go on forever and make yourself really miserable.
So the idea is to practice accepting. What so? Accepting what so? The fifth technique is forgiveness. Again, lots of people preach that. But look at it. Let's suppose there's someone who has really done you ill. I mean, not pretend. Someone really screwed you over sometime in the past. Okay? Now, you have a lot of resentment, animosity toward that person and that event. What's the result of that resentment? That animosity you have, it makes you miserable. Right? So you can really get to be right about it. Oh, this person shouldn't have done that. And you may very well be right, whatever being right means. But holding on to that point of view only makes you miserable. It does not punish the other person. So again, it's hard to do, but it's definitely a technique that will lead to happiness. And as I said, what's most important is forgiveness of yourself. Just look at your past, something you really, I can't believe I did that. You did do that. And so now you can harp on it and feel bad about it and whatever. Or you can forgive yourself for that. Let it be. Let it go. I'd like to open up the floor for questions. Let them at it. Come at me.
Just a moment.
Okay.
Any questions?
Yeah, I'm sorry, just give me a second. Let me just get rid of that.
I'm Dr. Berman, and professor of philosophy, retired. And my theory of happiness is that it is a choice. If you want to be happy, choose to be happy.
Yes.
That's all you need to do. Your presentation was beautiful, and all those steps are essential. But in the end, if you want to be happy, choose to be happy, and you'll be happy.
I agree with you to a point. That is, I agree with you that choosing to be happy is a necessary step for happiness. If you really want to be miserable, you're not going to be happy. So I agree with you. Choosing to be happy is necessary. I'm not so sure it's sufficient for most people. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe in your experience, choosing to be happy is enough. It wasn't for me. I would choose to be happy, and I would feel happy for a while, but then it would vanish. So I don't know. You may be right. I guess it's up to the individual. If you can choose to be happy and be happy, forget about what I said. You don't need any of this stuff. Just be happy. In my opinion, for most people, it takes a little bit more. I don't know. It may be, maybe that's all it takes. But I think it takes more. Just my opinion. Yes?
Yes. Let's go back to 300 BCE for a minute and mention Epicurus. Epicurus
okay.
would agree with you that having really great, rich things only brings transitory happiness and then it goes away, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
But then he also said that really to lead a happy, contented life, you need freedom, you need friends, and you need an analyzed life. Don't you think that's sufficient?
No. Oh, no, I don't. Well, first of all, there's an example like Nelson Mandela, who was in prison, really in very worst circumstances, and seemed to be happy. On the other hand, I think there are examples. I'm sorry, tell me one again. What are the three things? Friendship?
Freedom, friends, and an analyzed life.
Okay, freedom and friends and an analyzed life. Okay. Well, I'm just looking at my experience. Freedom, I've always had that. I've always had friends. Now, you may be right. Analyzed life. I don't know. I don't know. I think the real thing to do is to look in your own experience. I mean, that makes sense. You analyze life, but how do you analyze the life? Just as a philosopher? I don't know. I mean, it's a good point. And try it, let us know, okay? Or maybe you've tried it, have you?
That's excellent.
Oh, okay. If it works for you, great, okay. No, seriously. Whatever works for you, works for you. Now, I mentioned it took me 5 years to learn this. I must confess that there were other people who learned it in about 3 years. I was really a slow learner. I'm not kidding. I'm really serious. I was really a slow learner.
It's not mathematics.
Pardon?
It's not mathematics.
It's not mathematics. It's not mathematics, that's for sure. Yes?
Yes, hello. Thank you for your talk. I've wondered something on this topic for a number of years. I seem to have read something about it in my youth, and it's just kind of holding me. I can't remember the sources, and I'm wondering if you come across something like what I'm talking about.
I'm having a little trouble hearing you.
Sure, sorry. My bad. I have a question. I read a number of things about happiness in my youth, and a few of them kind of kept with me, but I don't remember the sources or the whole structure behind it.
Okay.
And I'm wondering what you've kind of bumped up against in the literature. I read, and it has somehow settled into me, that happiness itself is a shallow virtue. That this pursuit of happiness, the original line was the pursuit of property, the line in our Constitution and our milieu. And to have, you know, you could be content, like Nelson Mandela, for lack of a better word. But I don't know that you necessarily call him happy within that. He could, confine himself.
Right.
He also has an exotic past. So, I was just wondering, have you found anything else along those lines where happiness itself is a shallow virtue, and that, we can search for other deeper things within our life, like a purpose or some sort of contentment? And I'll leave you.
Well, again, that's up to the individual. I mean, I don't think happiness is shallow, okay? In fact, I think that once you have happiness, you're in a much better position to seek other things. Because then you're not seeking them in order to get happy, in order to solve this problem, whatever. So I don't know. It's just real interesting. You raise some good questions. And it depends on your own experience. In my experience, being happy is great. Now, by the way, I don't want to claim that being happy is the end all. I am happy. And I still like to look about, to investigate things. I still have lots of interests. I don't just sit around lying around and being happy. So, I don't know. I think it's a deeper virtue. But again, I don't know. I'm just giving you my opinion. My opinion is no better than anyone else's. But also, I think that what's important here is not opinions, but experiences. What really works for you? I don't know. Yes?
Just to make an obvious observation, but it seems so many of your rules are in collision with some of the structure of our culture. Some examples would be Madison Avenue. We're constantly presented with the image of the massive house or the big car.
Right.
You will be happy.
Right.
And we sort of feed on that because people then say, well, that's what we need for jobs, what have you. Or in the criminal justice system, we evaluate people more favorably if they show remorse, which to me is, in a sense, saying that's not forgiving yourself. Continue to blame yourself. Maybe, I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but I'm saying, is there some sort of underlying conflict between this system and our current culture?
The answer is yes. There's a big conflict because, as you point out, we are constantly inculcated with these messages: buy this product and you will be happy. Sometimes they say that, but even if they don't come right out and say it, they certainly imply it. Our whole society, not that it's too strong a statement, but to a large extent, our culture is predicated on that stuff. And the problem is, young children are sitting there watching that stuff. And you know, we're learning that constantly. And that's why I even said in my chart about learning to drive the car and about being happy, is that once you learn to be happy, it really takes some practice. Because we are living in a culture that teaches us that, you know, get the better clothes, you'll be happier, the actress, the fame, the fortune, whatever. We are totally bombarded with those messages. So you're right. There's a big conflict here. And I think, well, again, I'm not on this anymore. But I agree with you. There is a big conflict.
A lot of what you say resonates. I've been reading some philosophers lately. How you perceive things is everything, not the external action. That's an internalization. One of the things that they also talk about is practicing daily, what if I didn't have this? What if I didn't have this house, this wife, this life? And how would I react to that? And then sort of mentally divorcing yourself from it. Well, I'm not quoting Israelis or very well, but that kind of thought.
No, that's a good idea. I can, excuse me, I'm still recovering from the cold here. I can really see some value in that. Yeah, what you're suggesting is take something that you think makes you happy and ask yourself, you know, what would it be if I didn't have this? I'm all for that. I think that's a good technique. I'm not sure. No, seriously, I think that's a good technique.
Yeah, I was picking up on some of the other speakers, some of the ideas. One some of the most accomplished people were, you read their biographies and they were virtually never happy, but they were always driven to accomplish things, and they got a lot of things done.
Right.
Because they weren't contented.
Right.
So, if you want to get something done, maybe you shouldn't be contented all the time. The other thought is about the Epicurean philosophy. I hadn't thought about that. Usually you think of that in terms of hedonism and so forth, but I saw some video about recently where Epicurus had these communities which were really kind of the forerunners of the monasteries, only they were much happier places than the Christian monasteries became later, where people lived together in harmony. I think other people is an important element to happiness. You know, if it's just something you try to do by yourself, maybe hasn't accomplished that. And a lot of your philosophy there is in Buddhist philosophy, the absence of desire is
right.
The secret to happiness and meditation and so
right.
forth. People like the Dalai Lama seem happy.
Right, exactly. Yes. You raised two very good points. Let me address them first. Let me address the first one first. I'm sorry, I don't remember what order. That is, unhappiness drives people to accomplish. Now, I give a very good example in my book. If you want to change, let's say you want to change yourself, you're now at point A, and now you want to get to point B. Well, one possible way to do that is to reject point A. This is bad. This is no good. I'm really driven. I need to get, I'm point A. I really need to get over there. I think it was Maslow, I have it quoted in my book. There's a famous 20th century philosopher who pointed out that that's not correct. The best way to get from A to B is to accept that you're an A, and you can still prefer B. Now, in my book, I give an example. I play the piano. I'm an amateur pianist. And I was trying to play this piece that I hadn't played for a long time. Not doing a very good job of it. And I really wanted to learn to play it better. It was something I wanted to do. Now, what I could have done is just really blame myself. Hey, this is no good. I don't give myself all this chatter. But I didn't do that. What I did is I just looked and said, hey, wait a second. I haven't played this piece for a long time. Isn't it amazing that I can look at these black dots on the page and my fingers start moving? Now, I can't play it as well as I would like, but this is amazing. I can play it as well as I can. And then from that point, it was easy to say, okay, well, now I'm going to have to practice 20 minutes a day or do whatever I need to do. So what I'm saying is it's a mistake to think you have to be unhappy or reject what you are to accomplish something. I don't see any evidence that happy people aren't as accomplished as others. I mean, I don't know. I don't have the data. So that was the first point. And the second point, I'm sorry, I forgot him.
Well, I said something about, he mentioned Epicurean communities, and living with other people was versus just trying to find happiness just with yourself.
Okay, yes. First of all, let me admit, confess, I'm not a philosopher, so I'm not very familiar with that, but definitely that's right. But just the reason he said, because otherwise we are surrounded by all these negative messages. All these negative messages of do this and it'll make you happy, do this and it'll make you happy, whatever. So being around other people is definitely advantageous. Definitely. Now again, let me tell you my experience, which I think was really great. I started this course. And when I started this course, there was a group of people who had started a year before me. And it was just great to be around. I was only around these people for one weekend a month. But being around those people really gave me the confidence. Huh? How do these people learn to be happy? So being around happy people, I'm all for that. Yes. If we can make a community of happy people, let's do it. I'll sign up. No, no kidding. I'm for that. Yes.
Happiness is contagious.
Happiness is contagious. Yes. Happiness is contagious. Oh, happiness is contagious. It's the same word about that. I'm very happily married. You read about it in the book. My wife has never taken any of these courses in happiness. She has always supported me, and let me spend the money and the time or whatever, but she didn't take the courses. And then there was once when one of the people in the course was in Dallas. We met for lunch, and this person asked my wife, how come you're not studying this? And her answer, I think, was right. I don't need to. I'm around George. I think happiness is contagious. There's no doubt that she's happier because I am. I don't blame her. I don't try to change her. Yes. Be around happy people. Yes.
So one of the comments about happiness being a choice, I think happiness, it's a concept, so it's going to mean something different. It's going to be a different experience for everybody. So
yes.
When you say the word, it may have different implications. I would use the analogy of school. Say you want to get to being happy and you want to make an A on a test. Some people might have to study for 5 minutes and then others would have to study for 3 hours. It's
right.
The same. Some people would have to just take it as a choice, which I have never been able to do. People have told me that. And then some people might have to practice those 5 processes for years and years to get to happy. And then to the other comment about it being shallow, I think on the surface, happiness can be shallow, and then I like to use the analogy of working out. You say you go to the gym and work out, well, that's really shallow. But both of these are processes where you practice, and it's what you do during the time and how you feel is what matters. And I can say, somebody who has been unhappy for a long time and they haven't practiced happiness, it's going to be as hard as somebody who's really out of shape and who's never worked out going into the gym. So you have to practice, like lifting weights.
Yes, I agree with you totally. And especially your first statement, that some people find this easier than others, just like some people find music easier than others, or learn to drive a car easier than others. Why is it that some people find happiness easier than others? I don't know. As I say, it took me 5 years. I don't know. But yes, some people find it easier than others. And your other point is, while learning to be happy, while doing this stuff, you're happy in the process. It's not like, well, I'm working out, oh, this is terrible, I'm working out, but I got to work out in order to, you know, whatever. It's not like that. The process itself is enjoyable.
I have a couple of questions for you, Dr. Kimmeldorf.
Yes.
I don't know if you're familiar with the term eudaimonia or eudaimonia.
I'm afraid I'm not.
That's a full philosophical term.
Okay.
Aristotle talked about that way back there, 360 years ago, BCE. And he said that that's for which we want something, that's the final thing. We want riches, we want power, we want sex for that.
Right.
And that's often translated as happiness,
okay.
But it's better translated as well-being or fulfillment.
Okay.
Do you agree with that definition? And the second question is entirely different. I'm a doctor, okay? Is happiness a matter of chemistry, hormones, too much enough serotonin or dopamine? And we just take Prozac or Xanax or, cocaine to get happy.
Okay.
Because the opposite, of course, is chemical too, depression.
Okay, well, let me answer your second question. The answer to both questions is the same, which is I don't know. I greatly suspect, you know more about it than I do, but I greatly suspect that, yeah, there's a lot of hormonal elements to this. I mean, we certainly know that if people who smoke pot, at least at that time, are happy. So there's, some chemical change in the brain. So, I mean, the bottom line to your question is there's some hormonal changes. I really don't know. It would be nice if people studied this, and maybe they have. I don't know. So really, all I can say honestly is I don't know. I suspect that's true. In fact, if you ask why are some people happier than others, it could be just that. I do not know. And what was your other, I'm sorry, what was your
is happiness really translated better as well-being or fulfillment?
Could be, I don't know. I mean, you could ask, a very philosophical question, what is happiness? And I'm going to answer that by quoting a Supreme Court justice. I think it was Frankfurter, I'm not sure. The issue before the Supreme Court was pornography. And the question was, well, how do you define pornography? And his answer is, well, I know it when I see it. Okay. Was it Frankfurter? Do I have that right? Felix Frankfurter, okay. So I would say the same thing for happiness. I wouldn't try to define the word in terms of other words. I mean, we might, fulfillment, yes, okay. Satisfaction, yes. But for me, I know it when I find it.
You stated that it took you 5 years to get to that state.
Yes.
So at what point did you attain the state where you decided that you were there?
I'm sorry, what was the last question?
At what point, what occurred that made you decide that I have attained happiness and now I know for however many years it's been, that's when I got to that point?
How did I know I'd achieved that point?
Right.
Okay, two things. Number one is felt happy, okay? That's the main thing. And number two, my teacher said, look, I've taught you all I can. Go out and teach. Okay. So anyhow, that's, but you raised a good question. What would happen if I had quit after 4 years? Or could I have gone on even further? So no. Oh, the other thing I want to mention. I mean, somebody said you let me get it right now. You teach what you need to learn. And I found when I've taught these courses on happiness, I'm happy. I'm happier teaching the courses. Because, well, two things. Number one is I'm doing good for people, and that, you know, makes me happy, whatever. But the other thing is that when I'm talking to them, just like I'm talking to you, I'm hearing myself. It's like I'm my best student. Okay? So, you know, why am I here? I enjoy this, you know? Does that answer your question?
A little bit. I wonder after the first year if you got to a certain level. Like, were you constantly unhappy and then you got to a point?
No. Okay, I understand the question. No, it was gradual. It was a gradual process. And as I mentioned, there are two things that really helped me out. One thing that helped me out is these more advanced students. So I could see what the prospects are. Ah, this person's been studying for a year before I started. Look at this person. And that wasn't just one. There were several more advanced students. So that's one thing that has helped me out. The second thing, to be honest with you, it's very hard to make a habit to exit place for me and stuff like that. So it would have been very easy at some point to say, oh, look, I don't feel like going to class this week, this month. I'm just gonna blow it off. It would have been very easy for me to do this. I had one really good thing working for me. One is I was a cheapskate, and I bought non-refundable tickets. Okay. So I had non-refundable tickets, and then I'm not going to, you know, blow it off. I'm going to go. But anyway, that's just what worked for me. But I think being more advanced students and seeing what's possible was really, you know, the motivation. Because otherwise people would say, well, I'm going to teach you to be happy. A lot of people say that. By the way, if you look at the best-selling books, there are two classes of books that are the best-selling books. One, diet books, right? New diet books come out all the time. Why do people keep on buying diet books? Well, no, they buy diet books because they want to lose weight. But why do they keep buying new diet books? Because the old ones don't work. Right? If you actually had a diet book that worked, the industry would be closed. The same thing is true for happiness books. I am convinced that you can't learn to be happy from a book. And I mean that. Nothing to learn to be happy from my book. I'd like you to buy my book or read it, whatever. But reading that book isn't going to make you happy. You've really got to practice it. It's a skill. Like learning to play the guitar, learning to play the piano. It's a skill. State of mind, definitely. And I think that gratitude is like playing a few chords on the piano. It really gets you started. It's an easy way to start. Other questions?
Yes. I'm your brother too, Patrick. So I see a lot of people inside their family and kind of inside their homes and where they're kind of here right now. And so I thought about these questions a lot. What makes certain families happy? What makes certain families successful? These sort of things. And I see it. You know, I get to watch and listen to people think all day. So incidentally, I see people choose to be miserable all the time.
People do choose to be miserable.
Oh, heavens to bed. You know, big.
Yes. And I can tell you, I have a theory why, but go ahead.
Sure. One of the things I work on as a tutor is getting people through the SAT process, SAT-ACT process, right? And one of the things I really work with my students is showing them that they can achieve these things.
Yes.
Like we lace in and we start at one point and we end at another. And right. They're typically ecstatic about their scores, right? Whether or not they hit the target or miss the target, they're ecstatic about the improvement. And I think one of the things is that they're getting in and realizing, you know, that they are the sort of person that can achieve these things.
Yes.
And I think that's, like, for lack of a word, a part, like, it's an identity shift.
Yes.
And so I wonder if you've contemplated that as part of your happiness equation, whether or not, like, self-identity.
Well, definitely. Self-identity is a very big part of this. And I would not have continued in this course, like the SAT, I wouldn't have continued in the course if I didn't think it's something that I could achieve. But the other thing you mentioned, very important, I should have talked about it, is that there are people who choose to be miserable. Right? I have a theory why, though I don't know. That is, they think they don't deserve to be happy. Either for religious reasons or because they feel guilty about what they've done. I'm not sure. I'm not an expert on that. But your observation is right on. There are people who don't choose to be happy. And how to get through to those people, I have no idea. Don't know.
I was wondering if you would expand a little on the idea of acceptance of yes. others. I'm kind of struggling with the concept of accepting a morally repugnant person.
Okay, good.
If, I mean, even thinking about it makes me uncomfortable.
So yes.
How would that make me happy?
Oh, I got it. Good question. Okay. Well, very good. The distinction is, let me see if I can really say this and make it clear. The distinction is accepting the person without accepting the deed. In other words, consider a child molester. I don't know, maybe that's even too extreme an example.
Is that what the Christians say, love the sinner but hate the sin?
That's what the Christians say. Exactly what the Christians say. But what the Christians don't say is how to do that. Okay? So that's exactly, you're right, that's what the Christians say, okay? And but let me go back ahead, now you ask a very good question, okay? And it can be done. If you really look at a lot of these people's background, people are in prison, you know, they did these terrible things. What drove them to that? Okay? I'm just suggesting this as a technique, how to love the sinner without loving the sinner. Can you have compassion for that person? Can you see that if you were in that situation, you might have done the same thing? I don't know. And this is what I talk about. It's not easy, okay? But I think you're right on. It's hard to do. And I think that's the thing to do. Again, for your well-being. And on this person's in prison, let him rot in hell, doesn't make me very happy. I mean, he's more happy if he's in prison than he's out of prison doing more damage, you know. I'm not saying don't punish people for, you know, what they've done. But I'm saying, yes, there's that forgiveness over there.
Is that sort of like the AA thing, give me the strength to know what things I can change, know that I cannot change, and I forgot wisdom to know the difference.
Right.
So, you know, like you can't change evil. I mean, it's going to, you know, these murderers or this guy that, you know, it's reprehensible. You can't change it. So, you know, is that what you're saying?
Well, that's not what I'm saying. I agree with what you say. But that's not quite what I'm saying. I mean, I agree with what you said, that to try to change him probably ain't going to work. I mean, But I'm looking at your happiness, your individual happiness. How do you make yourself happier? Given the more important situation, suppose you have a criminal who's actually done something to you or to your family where you really feel personal about it. You know, that's really hard, okay? So again, my interest is individual happiness. What can you do to make yourself happier in this situation? Now, I also believe, and this is just a belief, I can't prove this, that if we could, and that's why I have this nonprofit organization, if we could, in fact, teach happiness in the elementary schools, get people really to learn happiness at a young age, not have to buy into the advertising and all of this stuff, I think we'd have a much better world. Happy people don't murder people. Happy people don't commit all these terrible acts. You want to get peace on earth? I think I know how to do it. That's a hell of a statement. I take that back. Well, I think I know how to do it. The way to have peace on earth is to teach people how to be happy. Okay? Now, how do you go about teaching that? How do I go about putting it out there? I can talk to these people in the room here, but how do you present this to millions of people out there?
One at a time. We have time for one more question because they want to kick us out of here before 9 o'clock or by 9 o'clock. Is there another question for our speaker?
I'll give you one more chance to not know something.
Okay.
Why is it the Scandinavians are so much happier than everybody else?
You are absolutely right. I don't know. She raised the question. Or I don't know. I do not know.
But research always says that when they survey them, they always come out on top.
The Swedes are happy with the Finns have the highest suicide rate in the world.
Okay, the Swedes, the Norwegians, everything's true.
I don't know. That's a damn good question. It might be something in the culture. It might be something in their genes, you know. I don't know. It might be something in society. It might, you know, they've got light colored hair. Maybe they've got certain hormones. I don't know. Bottom line is, don't know.
Thank you, Dr. Kemmelora. Well, thank you.